Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup Podcast. I'm Chad Young here with Pete Ball. We are, I was going to say, Pete, that we're days away from the start of the season. I guess we're days past the start of the season, but also days away from the start of the season.
Season hasn't started yet.
I feel that way. I totally understand why the Japan series games exist and why they're in Korea before. Like, I get it. And I will say, like, I understand that all this stuff is always a money grab, and I could brush it off as just a money grab, but like, the atmosphere in Japan was legitimately cool. It was fun that they did it. I get it, but I also kind of hate it. I don't know how you do something like that without doing it the way they did it. Right. Like, you can't give them like a road trip in the middle of the season. That's like, you know, three in New York and three in Kansas City and three in LA and then three in Tokyo. Like, you can't do it. So yeah,
I really just don't mind it. It's fine. You know, like, it's cool for the sport. It was an electric atmosphere. You know, I mean, to have Imanaga against Yamamoto, like, that's wicked cool. Otani hitting a homer. Like, I don't think there's anything really that bad about it. For fantasy, it can be a little frustrating, especially depending on the platform you play for. Like, my brother was keeping Shohei Otani, and we were in a slow draft, and ESPN just automatically put Otani into his starting pitcher slot as opposed to the utility. So those two game stats will count in our first matchup, and so he did not get that Otani homer. So it's little things like that that make it annoying, but if you remove the fantasy implications, it's just cool. Like, it's still going to feel like opening day for the Red Sox, you know, on the 27th. Right. So, like, it didn't take anything away from me.
No, and the reality is, like, over the years, baseball, like, it's such a hyper-localized sport compared to the NFL or the NBA, where, like, not such as opening day, like, the home openers are a big deal, right? Like, we get this all the time where a team, like, you know, it's 8 days into the season and they're playing their home opener, and it feels like opening day because it's the home opener. And so, you know, I agree. I don't know. It feels awkward to me, but I also, like I said, it's a cool atmosphere. I get why they do it. I like that they do it. I just, you know, anyways, let's talk jersey numbers real quick before we get into the meat of the episode. Jersey number 61, because this is episode 161. There are some interesting pitchers who had three different careers, I would say, but interesting pitchers nonetheless. Levon Hernandez, Bronson Arroyo, and Chan Ho Park are basically that's it. Like, they're the only players who wore number 61 for more than like 6, 7, 8 seasons, something like that. Like, if you go to 10 seasons, they're literally, I think, the only players who wore that jersey for more than 10 seasons. If you go to like 8 seasons, they're the only players who have worn it for more than 8 seasons and who have accrued more than 3.5 RWAR. So that's it. Those are your choices. I'm guessing you have a soft spot for Arroyo, given his Boston days.
I would honestly give it to Josh Beckett. He didn't wear it nearly as long as those guys, but that 2003 Florida Marlins World Series championship, I think, is probably the most impressive of this lot. So, like, if you're a longevity guy, I would get the Arroyo or Levon Hernandez or Chan Ho Park. But for like peak performance, playoff Beckett, World Series champion.
How much do you remember the 97 playoffs?
I was 5, so I don't.
That's what because as good as Beckett was in 2003, Levon Hernandez was awesome in 97. So let's go back. We can compare the numbers, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering. He had that one game. He had a game that year. This is the famous game with the wide strike zone, where it was just like, as long as he threw the ball generally in the direction of home plate, it was a strike. He appeared in 5 games, 3 as a starter, through 28 1/3 innings, the 3.18 ERA. on his way to that World Series. Maybe it was just that one game I'm thinking of. I wonder if I can find.
Well, Beckett in the World Series was World Series MVP, 1.10 ERA through two starts. His whip against the New York Yankees with Sheffield and Giambi and everybody you can remember, 0.796 whip. He was incredible in those games. He only record-wise, he only went 2-2, but I wish this was easier to navigate. I could give you the complete picture, but he was unbelievable in those playoffs. Made three appearances in the NLCS against the Cubs, the Bartman series, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so what I'm remembering is the 97 NLCS, Hernandez, as a rookie, threw a complete game, three-hit shutout with 15 strikeouts against Atlanta. That was the game. Now, there were definitely some questions about the strike zone, as I said, in that game. But that game, it was impressive just the same. But yeah, I could see giving it to Beckett. The other thing Beckett has going for him is that in 2003, the Marlins didn't beat Cleveland in the World Series, so I have less hard feelings towards him. So I'm fine with that. It could be the Josh Beckett episode. Only six seasons wearing the jersey number, but you know,
memorable. Well, the first
he was, and he was definitely a better pitcher. Like you said, his peak performance was definitely better than any of those other guys we talked about. So yeah,
for sure.
Okay, fine. So today, what we want to discuss are players being added and dropped. You're getting close to, if you've been, you know, playing auto new, you've been doing ads and drops and auctions and stuff ever since your draft ended. If you're playing in other keeper formats, ads and drops might just be getting started. I know that's happening for a couple of my leagues. One of them, the first set of Fab, is tonight. And I actually want to, at some point in this episode, talk about that league because I'm in a little bit of a sticky situation right now, I think. But let's start with just guys who are being dropped in a lot of leagues and talk about, you know, Pete, I think we should discuss is, should they be dropped? If they're being, if are there contexts where you would drop them, but others where you wouldn't? Like there's some stuff to be, you know, hashed out in some of these guys. And I'm going to start by taking a look at some auto new data for cuts. I think this is pretty interesting because the bar to cut a guy in auto new is higher than it is in other formats, right? Deeper rosters, you keep guys forever. If you've got a guy in a good price, you may not want to drop him even if he's going to be out for the season. And so there's guys who might be like obvious cuts in redraft that are not cuts here. There might be guys who are obvious cuts even in other keeper leagues who are not cuts here. But here are guys being cut the most over the last 30 days. And there is one guy who is far and away ahead of everyone else. He is the only player being cut in more than a third of leagues. That is Gerrit Cole. 57% of leagues have cut Gerrit Cole. We know Cole is done for the year. I suspect the thing that pushes Cole over the top here isn't just that he's done for the year. It's that he was expensive. Like even places where people bought him at a discount last year because of the early season injury, you know, nobody has like a $5 Gerrit Cole. They have $10, $15, $20 Gerrit Coles at least. And I will say, like, I have him in our podcasters league, or I had him in our podcasters league. I didn't even wait to have a pickup. I was just like, cut. Is there any reason to be sitting on Gerrit Cole?
No, of course not. He's an easy cut at what his average price was. And then even if you're like, all right, you know, maybe I want to pick him up and stash him. Let's say he comes back in, let's be conservative, say August of next season. He will be a month away from turning 36 at that point, coming off of Tommy John surgery, coming the most recent time we saw him, he wasn't very good. Like he was better in the postseason. Now, granted, it sounds like he was pitching on a torn UCL, so I don't even know if there's really a way to evaluate that. But if that's the case, then you haven't even seen the guy in 2.5 seasons and he's going to be 36 in a month. So I have no interest in even stashing him. Would it surprise me if his ages 37 and 38 seasons are very, very good? No, of course not. He's a Hall of Fame pitcher, but I'm not going to bank on that and use up a roster spot and some money over the next couple seasons.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that his, if it were later in the season and I had, you know, let me take a look. I cut him at, I don't remember, $27, something like that. I am assuming that he is going to stay cut. No one's going to pick him up, at least for a while, which is sad for me because I could always use some cap space. So if anyone in the Podcasters League is listening and you're like, huh, should I pick him up? Yeah, go for it. That would be great if you would do that for me. But I'm expecting that to not happen. I cut him at, I'm going to pull him up right now, I think at $27. I had picked him up last March. I picked him up March 31st of last year. So I picked him up after the auction for $21. He was a free agent. He got some arbitration. He was $28 by the end of the season last year, or by the start of the season this year. I cut him 2 weeks ago, and he is now a $14 cap penalty. I'm assuming he's going to sit as a $14 cap penalty for a while. And then in early April, I'll pick him up and cut him again. He'll be down to a $7 cap penalty. At $7, or maybe if I do it again after that, and he's down to $4. He starts to be a guy who, like, he'll be on the 60-day IL by that point. He might be down. You might have a team that has a ton of cap space. At that point, at $4, $5, $6, like, I think I would stash Gerrit Cole because there's basically no cost to it, right? As long as you have enough cap space. Now, he's also a guy who, like, I might stash and then in August be like, oh, my cap space dwindled away. I'm gonna cut him again. That's fine. I could totally see doing that. But you know, he's doing the Tommy John plus the internal brace, which means the recovery is a little bit quicker, and so there's a chance he's back for the start of next season or something like that. Like, there's some stuff in here that there'd be some value in seeing where he is come January. But I think anything over, I guess, $7 or $8 at the most, and that's probably pushing it. In my other keeper formats, like, even if I could keep him for a last round pick in another round because he's a free agent now, I don't know. It has to be a pretty deep format, because the problem is, in shallower formats, if you're keeping him, you're relying on him. In Auto New, you could keep him at $8 and he could be your seventh starter, and that's fine. In our listener leagues on Fantrax, where we have like 28 man rosters and you're not like, you need guys to perform, I'm less willing to stash him.
Yeah, that's a fair way of looking. I think there's a glass half full and glass half empty view. The glass half empty on, like, basically saying, like, why I would not stash him. Yuri Perez is a million years younger, roughly, give or take a few, than Gerrit Cole. He had Tommy John surgery a little bit later, so that matters, about a month, well, a half a month later, so maybe it doesn't matter at all. And his ADP was outside the top, like, 250 this year. So even if Gerrit Cole follows the same kind of timeline, granted, Yuri Perez doesn't have the track record of Gerrit Cole. Sure, that might matter here. I think we all assume Yuri Perez is going to be pretty good, though. Then, like, you don't need to pay a last-round pick or whatever to keep Gerrit Cole. Like, there's still not going to be a lot of value there. The other way of looking at this is, okay, maybe I can keep a last-round Gerrit Cole, and look at what Justin Verlander did when he went away with Tommy John. He missed all of 2021 with Tommy John surgery, came back in 2022. Now, Justin Verlander is a unique beast. He's maybe the best pitcher of my lifetime. But Gerrit Cole's kind of in that, if anybody, you know, is in that range, yeah. Gerrit Cole's in that range. And Justin Verlander came back the very next season off Tommy John surgery and won the Cy Young Award. So
right.
The Yuri Perez way, he's probably not worth keeping. You view it the Justin Verlander way, like, yeah, I'm going to do what it takes to keep him on my roster. I guess it just kind of depends on how you feel about the pitcher. And I don't know how you can have anything conclusive in your head about Gerrit Cole at this point.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple other pitchers. I'm not going to necessarily just go down this list of most cut, but there's three other pitchers I want to discuss who are in a maybe similar boat, but at very different points in their career, we'll say. Shane McClanahan had triceps pain and is going for imaging. Triceps pain followed by imaging is often followed by Tommy John surgery. McClanahan has already had two Tommy Johns, so this is a little terrifying. Jared Jones got imaging done, missed a start, and we are waiting on a second opinion. This is another case where, like, usually you don't go get it. Like, if the first opinion was like, your arm's great, just give it a week and you'll be fine. That's not usually when you go for a second opinion. So you got to worry about what's going on with that. And then Ryan Weathers is hurt. Doesn't appear to be as serious, although I don't think we have a final report on him either, right?
I didn't hear anything other than it's forearm soreness or whatever it was. Like, I think Weathers is far away from the finish line on this one, unless there's been something else that I haven't read.
No, yeah, just his forearm, and then he's headed to the IL.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. So let's start with this. We don't know what's going to happen with any of these guys. So let's start with, given what we know right now, are you dropping any of them right now?
Weathers, yeah, sure. Like, he's had a great spring, and he's been exciting in the past, even back to his days in San Diego, but, like, depending on the depth of the league, you probably used a post 250 pick on him anyway. Maybe he's had a lot of helium, so maybe you had to use a top 250 pick, but not enough to like wait it out. If I have no IL spots, then I'm definitely dropping him. If I have IL spots, sure, I'll stash him.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think Weathers, the thing with Weathers is you picked him up as a, hey, this guy's been interesting, he's got some talent. There's almost always some other guy who's interesting and has talent available. And if I'm cycling through those guys, and I want to be cycling through those guys, I don't want to sit on one of them, right? Like, you know, if there were a Paul Skeens out there and you were like, oh, I'm gonna have to sit on him for a few months while I wait for them to call him up, like, fine. But if it's Ryan Weathers, like, even if they come back tomorrow and say, yeah, he's gonna miss a month, but then he's gonna be fine, there's no structural damage, we're just gonna like ease him back, like, go find somebody else with upside that you can actually see what they can do over the next month rather than sitting on him.
Especially Jones, since, not to spend too much time on Weathers, but like the walks were still bad. So like,
yeah,
like, no, he's not worth stashing.
I think that's right. Jones and McClanahan, like, Jones was good last year and looked like he was ready to take another step this year. McClanahan, we have seen be brilliant. I am not ready to cut either of those guys now. I totally agree with you. Let's fast forward a week. Let's assume it's a week, and let's assume they both have surgery. I'm not doing that because I want to assume that. I don't want that to be the case, but I'm just to sort of play this out and give listeners some thoughts on this. Are you stashing either of those two?
Like, when you say surgery, you're saying if McClanahan has Tommy John surgery?
Let's assume they're both done for the year. Whether it's Tommy John or something else.
I'm not stashing Shane McClanahan. I pay too much to get him. I think Jared Jones is a better example because, you know, if you have Jared Jones, you maybe got hit a little bit in arbitration, right? But was it that bad? No. Like, I'm looking at the Podcasters League, and I'm pretty sure I've got Jared Jones for $9. And that's like an interesting decision I'm going to have to make. Jared Jones, $9. If he has Tommy John surgery, do I keep him for 11 next year and kind of see how it goes? I might, but 11 is really pricey. I think it kind of goes back to that conversation about Garrett Cole, where like 7-8 might be the comfort point. Yeah. Anything beyond that, because Jared Jones was still, he still needed to develop a third pitch. He wasn't having like immense success in the major league. So even then, right, $11 feels like a lot to pay. So I think I've just convinced myself I actually would not stash either of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel that way. I'm sort of torn on Jones. So looking at my auto new leagues, I have Jones. I have a $10 Jones and I have a $13 Jones. You've got a $9 Jones. My other leagues, there's a $6 Jones, another $13 Jones, an $11 Jones, and a $4 Jones in our listener league. Sounds like you're saying that four and that six are probably like, yeah, that price, hold on, let's see what's what, but not those ones that are 9, 10, 11, 13.
You got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. And I've left enough auctions with, you know, $5, $6, $7 left over where I'd probably be like, man, I wish I had a dice roll with the upside of Jared Jones. So like, yeah, I'd keep him at that point, but you got to draw the line in the sand somewhere. Double digits makes me a little nauseous on that one.
Yeah. And McClanahan he's only a little bit more. So in like, again, across my seven leagues, 14, 8, 10, 10, 16, 10, 13. I think the big thing with McClanahan is if that's what it turns out to be, we're getting into uncharted territories with a
third. Oh, I'm just out. Yeah, yeah. He could be a buck. I don't want to use the roster spot. Three Tommy John surgeries and the third one came like within 50 pitches or whatever of the second. Like, I'm just
now, what if it's
not mean, but
no. What if the report comes back? You know, let's say for both of them, let's say for McClanahan, they're like, it was sore. He's still recovering from surgery. It's not crazy that it was sore. The doctor says it looks good. He's just going to like, he's just got to slow things down. He tried to come back a little too fast. It's going to be a month or two. And Jones, let's say the same thing. They say, hey, you know, that second opinion, we got that second opinion just because we wanted to be sure. Nobody's recommended surgery. Everybody said, give him a month or two, he'll be fine. But we wanted to be sure. Second opinion agreed. That's where we are. And these guys are both looking at like not throwing a pitch until the end of April and then having to work their way back. So they're back, let's say, June 1st. Are you stashing both Jones and McClanahan then?
I'm keeping both. If I have both on the same roster, which, you know, some folks might in some leagues, then that's dicey. I think you got to pick. And in that case, I am going to pick McClanahan just because he has proven way more at the major league level than Jared Jones has. And even though McClanahan's probably going to be on a little bit of an innings cap, I think certainly after this injury, Jared Jones, best case scenario, is going to find himself in the same boat, especially with the pitching that the Pirates have coming up in Bubba Chandler and I can't think of the other guy's name,
Thomas Harrington.
So like, I'd rather have McClanahan. If that's the report, I'm going to stash either. I use too much draft capital or too much money to get them that I can't abandon ship already, especially in a head-to-head league where like, just make the, if you get them back, it's a clean slate, man. Whatever happened before that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I do have them in my food and travel league, which is at 4x4. I have McClanahan and Jones. They were two thirds of what was going to be a three headed ace with Joe Ryan. And I felt pretty good about that. I've got Christopher Sanchez, Shane Boz, Bailey Ober, Spencer Arrighetti, Bowden Francis behind them. I also have David Peterson cheap, $1 David Peterson in that league. And then I had Cody Bradford, who I was sort of interested in, Zebby Matthews, who I am excited about, and Noah Schultz, who I am excited about. And all of a sudden, you know, I went into the season thinking like, I'll probably get some innings from Schultz. I'm definitely gonna get some innings from Zebby. Bradford's an interesting upside guy. Now all of a sudden, Zebby's not in the rotation. You know, I've now lost two of the guys I was really counting on at the top of the rotation, and it's getting real dicey with that rotation real fast. I'm going to have to spend some time looking at who's available to pick up because it's getting ugly in that one.
Yeah, that's
a very, very rough week for that.
Quick story time. If you want to feel better, there's a guy in my 16 team league. We just did our slow draft. First time we ever done a slow draft before. Thank you, ESPN, for including that this season. He was keeping an 18th round Spencer Strider, which you just got to do. Too much talent there. Yeah. And then over the course of the draft, he took Jared Jones. That was before the injury news. Yeah. So that made sense. A little bit of a reach because it is a deeper league and obviously a keeper league. So the age thing's important. He then was like, you know what? I'm going to roll the dice on Grayson Rodriguez. He's fallen far enough. The upside there is huge. And he must have felt real comfortable and said, I'm going to take Sean Manaea. It's not an arm injury. You know, he could be coming back. And then he reached for none other than Ryan Weathers. So, that rotation is Weathers, Manaea, Strider, Grayson Rodriguez, and Jared Jones. That is just a brutal start to the season for him.
Yeah. We'll, in a minute, I want to talk about a team that I've had as just an absolutely rough run of injuries. But let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that team. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. And Pete, we're going to talk about this team where I've had a rough run of injuries. I think before people just hit the like fast forward button, I don't need to hear about Chad's sob story. I want to talk about this because there's a bunch of guys on this roster that I need to figure out if I'm keeping. And I'll explain why it's such a tough situation in a minute. This is my CBS head-to-head. It's that 6x6 that I've talked about before on the show. This all started for me before the keeper deadline. This league, we get two players voted off our roster, but you can franchise two players to protect them. One of the guys I protected was Jose Ramirez, Jose, if you end up popping up at some point later in this episode because some news breaks, I'm going to be very sad. So like, take care of yourself, buddy. But the other guy I protected was a $13 George Kirby, who seems like he'll be okay, but is going to miss a month-ish, something like that. I then had Garrett Cole, And luckily the news broke right before the keeper deadline. I had gotten trade offers for him. I was shopping him. It looked good. And then, yeah, had to cut him. I kept Jared Jones. And then the news broke after the keeper deadline, obviously. My outfield included Parker Meadows and Willier Abreu. I ended up cutting both of them. Then I went into the auction. And I intentionally picked up Francisco Alvarez, right? He was hurt already, but I just like, he was $1. And I was like, I will take his upside at catcher for $1. This is an easy choice. And it's not a league where catcher plays deep. Like, we're going to talk about free agents in this league in a minute, but like, I know Austin Wells is out there and I'd be thrilled to have Austin Wells as my catcher. So fine. By then the news on Parker Meadows was better. He was getting feeling back. He was starting to step, blah, blah, blah. So I picked him up for $1. I really like Parker Meadows. I grabbed Kyle Manzardo to be my util and a backup first base bat. Now Manzardo has shoulder issues. The news on Meadows has now gotten worse again. Like, I'm trying to remember, let me pull this up and make sure I've got the right information before I report something inaccurate. But it went from like, he was making progress, blah, 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 and now he's out at least 4 weeks. 4 weeks of rest from throwing.
That's a lot longer than 4 weeks.
Right. 4 weeks of rest from throwing means, and this is news that broke yesterday, so we're talking late April before he throws a ball. And by that point, you know, he's got to get his swing back. He's got to get, like, he's probably another month away after that or something like that, right? It's not going to be a quick return. And his value is, to the Tigers anyways, is being a center fielder. So they're not going to come back and throw him in at DH for a while he, you know, gets right. He's going to play center field when he can play center field, and he's going to not play until then. So it's been rough. We start fab. It's not really fab. It's because the price you pay for guys becomes their salary for keeper reasons. So it's sort of fab. We start it tonight. For those listening, that you're going to hear this on Monday, we're recording on Sunday, March 23rd. We start this tonight. We have IL spots. I have three or four IL spots, I think four, but these guys aren't on the IL. They will be as of whenever their teams actually set their rosters in a few days. But the chances are I'm going to go through fab tonight, and then the next fab is going to be Wednesday night. And they probably won't be put on the IL till Thursday. Because that's when games start. And so now I have to make a decision. First of all, I can only stash, like I said, three or four of these guys. I have to double check if I can stash them all. Or how many of them I can stash. I'm going to probably have to cut two of them. And if I'm going to do that, it probably makes sense for me to cut two of them now and go get some of the free agents that are out there before everyone else sort of picks the waiver wire clean. And I think it sucks because I was really excited about drafting Alvarez as my like long-term answer at catcher. But I think I basically have to drop Alvarez. As I said, Austin Wells is out there. I suspect I can pick up a $1 Austin Wells. And if I swap Alvarez for $1 Austin Wells, I think that's fine.
That's a good move. He's going to lead off against righties.
Yeah. If I don't get him, Keibert Ruiz, Ryan Jeffers, Alejandro Kirk, Connor Wong, Joey Bart. I mean, but I think I have to do something. It's just the difference between Wells and all those other guys is Wells has, I think, as good a chance as Alvarez of being a guy I'm happy to have for the rest of the season and into next mm-hmm. season. That's less true for most of those other guys. Any of those other guys, I'm moving into I guess I'm streaming catcher this year, which is not my favorite.
I'm completely out on Connor Wong. If your only redeeming quality is play time, that's not great. I don't love that because a professional baseball team will find somebody to replace you if you suck. And Connor Wong is not special behind the plate. And he's certainly not special with the bat. The StatCast data backs that up despite last year being a pretty nice season. So I don't mean to be mean to the guy, but I'm not excited about that. Joey Bart is he's interesting, but I'd still much, much, much rather have Austin Wells. So you have to make one move. I think that's the move, but that is some terrible, terrible luck.
I'm
fortunate. Most of my teams are on ESPN where like they will just give an out designation. Like if a player is even out for one day of spring training, you can then put them on the IL to make moves. I wish more leagues would embrace that, or more platforms would embrace that during the off season. It just makes it a little bit easier. Like I just put Gunnar Henderson on the IL, even though technically he's not on the IL, and I was able to pick up somebody. So that would certainly help your situation, but it doesn't. I think Alvarez for Wells swap is perfectly fine.
Yeah. And then I think I probably, like, I'm hoping that sometime today I get updates on Jones or Manzardo. Because if Jones is out for the year, so one rule in this league, first of all, my Jones is $3. So it is going to hurt to let him go. Mm-hmm. But if he's having Tommy John surgery, if I cut him, no one else can pick him up. Well, that's not true. They can pick him up, but you cannot keep a player who you pick up as a free agent who doesn't play during the fantasy regular season. So basically anyone who's not back by the end of August can't be kept. Mm-hmm. I could keep Jones. I could stash him and keep him because I had him before the season. But anyone you pick up in season has to perform in that season to be kept. So if I cut Jones, if he's gone for the year and I cut him, nobody else gets him. So I probably would do that. Kirby's not getting cut at $13. He's going to be back soon.
That's a really weird one. It sounds like he might have just played through it if it was in the regular season. I don't know enough about that situation, but he wanted to play, which, like, all right, and I'm in on Kirby.
Yeah, but I think that both Manzardo and Meadows, as much as I like both those guys, I think I've got to cut them both.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough.
And I'm really hoping Manzardo, the issue with Manzardo is he missed a game, maybe two at this point, with shoulder inflammation. That's all that's been said.
Yeah.
Now, I have some concerns that the Guardians, like Manzardo is a left-handed bat set to DH. And I do have some concerns that the Guardians immediately went out and traded for Nolan Jones, who is a left-handed bat who doesn't need to DH necessarily, but could. I'm a little worried that means they know this is worse than they've publicly stated so far. My hope is that having made that trade and now locked up what their plans are, that today, you know, when they talk to, I don't know, whether the front office talks and manager talks, whoever, what we get is an update from them saying like, no, Manzardo's fine. He'll be ready for opening day. Or yeah, the shoulder thing is a concern. Like, give me something. Cause if he's gonna be ready, I'll keep him. If he's not, I'm gonna have to move on. And like I said, with Meadows, I think probably done for April, definitely done for April and maybe done for a good chunk of May. I think I just got to drop him. I may try to pick him up again as he's getting closer to healthy. But I think I have to go make some moves.
Yeah, I was just going to say you could probably get him back in a few weeks if you know, some guys become IL eligible and you're like, all right, I want to pick up Meadows and stash him. I think you'll be able to make that flip. I don't think people are going to be rushing out to pick him up.
No, I think it's true. And by the way, I think that might be true for Alvarez as well. Now, we have a challenge here that I can't pick him up for 21 days after I drop him. And so somebody else who wanted to stash him theoretically could, but the way that works in our league, you have to do an add drop. So you can't add a guy direct to the IL. You have to put him on your bench, then move him to the IL to pick up someone the next time. So people don't often do that. So there's a good chance that Alvarez sits on the wire long enough for me to be the one who does that, which would be nice. But again, if I get Wells, maybe it doesn't matter. So yeah, so now I'm starting to look at outfield options. And so let's talk about pickups a little bit. In a little bit of a shallower league, right? The CBS league is a 25-man roster, 12-team league. Outfielders who are out there, as far as like the best performers from last year who are available, Jake McCarthy, does Jock Peterson have outfield eligibility here? No. So why is he showing up on this list? One moment. There we go. Jake McCarthy, Jesus Sanchez, who's also hurt. Jacob Young, who only shows up on this list because he stole a billion bases. Brandon Marsh, Matt Vierling, who's hurt. Luke Raley, Jesse Winker. Trevor Larnach, anyone from that group that you're like, yeah, that's the guy I want. And it's an OBP league that has extra category as extra base hits.
Honestly, no. There's
what about
there's
Lars really, Nootmaar?
Yes. Now Lars Nootmaar, I do like. I think you know, if anybody's in trouble of losing playing time in that outfield, and somebody's got to be, I actually think it's going to be Alec Burleson. I think Nootmaar needs more of a chance. His spring has been much better than Jordan Walker's and much better than Alec Burleson's. Good eye at the plate, 861 OPS this spring. So I'm at a point with Nootmaar where, like, if I don't see it this year, I'm out. I'm like kind of tired of hearing about the guy, but I am willing to give him one more year.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If I look at Roster Resource, and, you know, Roster Resource isn't always perfect or anything, but they have him starting in left field and hitting second. They have Burleson as the DH, and a DH platoon, actually, with Luke and Baker hitting seventh. Mm-hmm. They've got Walker and then Victor Scott the second as the other two outfielders. The Cardinals seem dead set on playing Walker and Gorman, for that matter. Although Gorman, I don't know where they're going to play him, which I get. I think given where the Cardinals are right now, like, they should be dead set on playing those guys, and they need to trade Arenado to make room for Gorman.
Absolutely.
But I don't think, like, I don't see who the threat to Nootmaar's playing time would be. Unless it's Gorman, I guess, right? Unless they're like, screw it, we're going to put Burleson in left and let Gorman DH just because we want to let him get plate appearances.
The only threat to Nootmaar's playing time is Nootmaar. He's got to stay in the field and he's got to produce. And to his credit, like, his underlying stuff, when he's like, he's what a baseball team's looking for. He's got a great eye at the plate. He doesn't strike out. He walks a lot. You know, last season, you barely heard his name. He had a 114 WRC plus, but he's just got to stay in the field and keep it together for a prolonged period. If he doesn't, then he is the biggest threat to his play time, because Jordan Walker is, like, basically a lost soul to me. He's so young, but I just couldn't be more out on the player. But if he does show anything and Alec Burleson starts showing something, like, Nootmaar could lose plate appearances.
Yeah.
But right now, as it stands, yeah, he's got to play. He's the best of that group.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's talk about a few more guys being cut in out of new leagues. Then we're going to flip our attention to guys that you could pick up or who are being picked up. Some of the top bats being cut in out of new leagues. There's a lot of guys who didn't make rosters. Noelvi Marte, Chase DeLauder, who's both hurt and didn't make a roster. Jace Young, who the Tigers sent down. Tyro Estrada, who is hurt. Sean Murphy, who is hurt. And Giancarlo Stanton, who is super broken, I guess.
See you later.
He has no elbows. I'm tabling the fantasy discussion for a moment. I'm super bummed about Stanton, not because I, you know, have any great love for the Yankees or anything like that, but, like, he is such a fun player when he's on, and he looked so good in the postseason last year. I mean, he was crushing baseballs. I wasn't thrilled about it. He is a big part of the reason the Guardians got knocked out. But I think this very likely ends his shot at 500 home runs, which I think also will negatively impact his Hall of Fame chances. And, like, I think that round number would have been enough for people to be like, how much are you going to knock the guy for injuries and longevity when he still got to 500 home runs? And the reality is, peak Giancarlo Stanton is a Hall of Famer. Like, that guy is one of the best power hitters any of us have ever seen. And I think it's a shame. It'll be a shame if he doesn't make it. And I think this injury might be the thing that leaves him just short. But
it could be.
That's neither here nor there.
We gotta figure out what actually is going on in those elbows, because it's still so weird to me that it's both elbows. He's sitting at 429. You know, you're right. It's probably not going to happen. But if he can get close, he has won an MVP. He is a very good playoff performer. Yeah. I think they're kind of getting softer, the voters, I hope. So he's still got a chance. But you're right. This doesn't look good to fall short when so close. That sucks.
He needed something like three more seasons like he had been having. Not necessarily 150 games played kind of stuff, but just like three more. He's out there a lot. He gets his 25 to 30 home runs in his part time. And I worry that this is going to make that impossible. But
yeah,
from a fantasy standpoint, he's a util only guy who may may not play again. We have no idea. Like, I'm out. That's fine. You can drop him. Are you stashing any of Marte DeLauder, Jace Young, Tyro Estrada, Sean Murphy?
Yeah, quite a few. Estrada still, I'm kind of interested. I had no interest in him when he was in San Francisco. He had that one nice season, and after that, he was going as like a top 200 player. Like, come on, guys, what are we doing? But now that he's in Colorado, we're going to do that thing we do whenever someone goes to Colorado, and it's like they could revive their career. And for whatever reason, I'm cool with that with Tyro Estrada. So I'd be fine stashing him. And Sean Murphy was so bad last year, and now he's hurt. I think he's someone who people might kind of forget about. And I am the guy who's like, you know, once you turn 30 years old as a catcher, I'm kind of done. But catcher's a tough position to fill. And so if I don't have one of those top, whatever it is, six or seven guys, I could easily see myself benefiting from plugging in Sean Murphy whenever he returns. DeLauder, is he ever going to play a major league game at this point? Like, I know that's got to cut deep, but man, like, is this, you know, a 90-year-old grandpa, or is this a kid trying to play baseball? I that sounds so mean. I feel bad saying that, but like, the guy can't stay healthy. He just can't.
I know. I am still holding on to DeLauder in some places where I have him at a low cost. Or where I have him stashed in a minor spot or things like that. The thing I will say is he's out, you know, it was 8 to 12 weeks. It's been a couple weeks already. So like, you know, he should be back late May-ish, something like that. And I don't think they're going to wait very long to get him into the major league lineup. The only challenge with that might be, again, this is another area where the Nolan Jones trade feels like that was a spot that a bunch of dudes were just keeping warm until DeLauder was ready. It was right field, right? Like, Will Brennan wasn't stopping DeLauder from coming up. They seem to refuse to let John Kenzie Noel be more than a platoon bat, which makes me a little crazy, but that's a different story. Now all of a sudden, you know, if Jones bounces back and is back to, you know, decent power, high on base percentages, like, maybe there's not room for DeLauder. So that's a little concerning. I don't know. I'll see how it plays out. But for now, I'm still holding him. Yeah. It's painful watching that happen,
though. I think they'll find room for him. Nolan Jones was good for 2 months of his career. So, like, this kid, if they waste any more of his bullets in the minor leagues, then you need to fire your front office. When he's ready to go, get him in the lineup and let's see what he can do.
Fair enough. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll get to more optimistic news. Guys who are being picked up instead of dropped. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're done with the depressing part of the show, Pete. We're going to talk, well, I shouldn't say that, because inevitably I'm going to bring up a name and we're going to be like, no, this guy's terrible. You don't want to pick him up. But let's take a look at some guys who are being added in leagues. I'm going to start with guys who are being auctioned the most in auto new leagues right now, like literally right this second. These are live auctions going on across all auto new. There are five guys being auctioned in 20 plus leagues. There's one guy at 19 who I might bring up as well. We'll see how far down this list we get. Guy being auctioned the most right now. We talked about that Nolan Jones trade. I keep calling it the Nolan Jones trade. There is a guy who went the other direction. Tyler Freeman, the most auctioned player in auto new right now. That's what happens when you go to Coors Field, is everybody tries to pick you up.
True. I just said that. Why am I surprised?
What are you doing with Tyler Freeman? You picking him up?
No. No, I'm not. I'm good. Next.
That's all you have to say? Nothing? The guy is he is eligible. Hold, wait. Multiple positions, right? He's shortstop and outfield eligible. He's gonna pick up second base probably within the first week of the season at this point. He's gonna be playing in Coors, makes a lot of contact, puts the ball in play. There is an awful lot of outfield grass for him to target there. You're like, no.
I thought he was a bench player or a platoon player, but I pulled up roster resource and he is starting because of the aforementioned Tyro Estrada. Yeah. All right. So maybe. He's certainly more interesting than Kyle Farmer, so I know why they got him slated in there. But it's also the Rockies, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, yeah, Kyle Farmer is our starting second baseman to start the year. He doesn't excite me that much. Like, Tyro Estrada has a defining fantasy skill that makes him interesting in Coors.
Which is right? What?
Stolen bases. I think he could, if he gets the play time, he could be a stolen base guy. He wasn't last year. He was the year before.
Yeah.
Tyler Freeman, not as much, but...
Freeman stole 11 bases, only getting 383 plate appearances last year. He, in the minors, stole as many as 19 in a season and stole double digits basically every year. I'll say this. I think a lot of people were drafting Estrada thinking, hey, in Coors Field and getting a full-time job, even though he's old and hasn't done it, like, he's got an outside shot at 2020. I think Freeman is a guy who has 15-15 in him.
Okay. Is 15-15 that special anymore? And he did have 11 steals. He had 11 steals and 383 plate appearances. He was caught six times. That is not a good percentage. Seven homers and 383 plate appearances. It's just not enough there for me to get excited. Yeah. I get why people in 12-team leagues with 40-man rosters are trying to get the guy who's going to Coors. I'm not judging that. I'm just personally out.
I think that makes sense. I'm not looking to pick him up. I actually think he will be a very useful player for them, but I also think the other piece of this is Estrada's not done for the year, so he's still probably coming back. And
he's going to play.
The thing that still perplexes me here is, like, they called up Adel Amador 2 years ago. Like, they called him up a while ago, and now they have an opening in second base. Right. Yeah. And then they were like, oh, no, we're going to go get Tyro Estrada to block him. And then Tyro Estrada gets hurt, and instead of being like, okay, he got himself out of our way for our, like, you know, nope, they went out and got Tyler Freeman. It's like, okay, so do they just hate Amador? Do they think he's just got nothing?
I don't know. He's walked 9 times and only struck out 5 times through 40 plate appearances this spring. He's batting 300, 842 OPS. Like, with already having major league experience, I do not know why they are not giving. I didn't even think of that, but that is very Rockies.
Yeah, I had him on a bunch of. I have him on a lot of teams where I've been stashing him. Like, and so it's frustrating that they're not going to do it. But whatever, we're going to move on. But we're not going to move very far. Because Nolan Jones leaving Colorado not only brought in a second baseman who's starting there, but opened up an outfield spot for Zach Veen. It looks like Veen is going to be the starting left fielder, I think. That suddenly, like, Beck, Doyle, Veen is a pretty interesting young outfield. Are you picking up Zach Veen anywhere?
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, like I said about Estrada, with speed being a skill, it's definitely a skill for Zach Veen. So in your leagues where that matters, I think that's important. And he's one of those prospects. I feel like he has to be at least 54 years old because we've been hearing about him for so long. And so usually you hear about a guy a lot because he's showing tools and he's showing potential. And now he's finally going to get that chance in Coors. So Zach Veen has been a target of mine. I got him early on in some NFBC 50s, obviously in keeper leagues. He's only 23 years old and set to start his career in Coors, coming off of a great sprint. He has 9 stolen bases this spring, only caught once. That'll play 884 OPS. You don't want to put too much into the spring numbers, but it's all we have. And I'm kind of in on Zach Veen. I like Zach Veen this year.
Yeah, I think the thing with Veen, like, last year in the minors, he only got 270 plate appearances due to injuries, but 11 home runs and 21 stolen bases. He had a 361 WOBA across 3 levels last year. He played a little bit in high A, and then most of his time was in double A, and he played a little in triple A as well. If I had a concern with him, it would have been whether he can maintain his walk rates and strikeout rates. So in double A, he had an 11% walk rate and a 26.2% strikeout rate. When he went up to triple A, he dropped that strikeout rate by 0.1%, 26.2 down to 26.1%. So basically maintained it, but dropped the walk rate from 11% to 7.6%. And so I was a little bit like, pitchers are getting better. What's that going to look like? Spring training so far, the strikeout rate is up to 29.7%, the walk rate down to 9.4%. That's 64 plate appearances. there's two angles on this. One is previous data has shown that about 60 plate appearances is around the point at which walk rate and strikeout rate start to stabilize. And so it's not that small a sample. Now, it is a spring training sample, which is not a real sample. And that like, I think a lot of times people are like, spring training stats, he's just playing against a bunch of, you know, random backfields guys who get a shot in the whatever. And like, that's true. But spring training is also like, guys are working on stuff. And like, you know, we talk about it with pitchers all the time. I think like I hear, you know, all the time about like, oh, this pitcher got knocked around today, but like he was working on his changeup. So he threw like 60% changeups. That's never what he's going to do. You don't hear about it with hitters, but I have to assume the same thing is true with hitters, that they're sent up with there with like, hey, your goal today is not to be the best hitter you can be. Your goal today is to like work on laying off pitches on the outside corner, or to work on taking a ball the other way, or what, like developing some skill. Like that's got to be part of what happens with hitters too. It's like, mm-hmm. you got to take all spring training stats with a grain of salt, but his spring training stats have been good. And for me, the big thing is that strikeout rate, like creeping up towards 30% is concerning. It was 26.1% in AAA last year. It's probably going to go up to start. Like it's going to be high at the beginning of the year, but if high can be under 30, that at least will allow him to like take advantage, of course, somewhat. And then hopefully he can bring it down over time. I am interested in Veen, but that's the thing I'm going to be watching is that strikeout rate. If he's still getting on base and avoiding strikeouts at too high a rate, I'm going to be real interested. He is, by the way, those are the two most auctions in Auto New right now, Freeman and Veen. Third most is a guy who I've been out on, but I'm wondering if I'm just wrong and should be buying in. And that's Ben Rice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say I'm out because I hate that team, but I don't know, man. I find myself becoming more and more in. Apparently, the two hardest hit balls of his career, he has hit this spring. That number might even be higher by now. I think I heard that information a few weeks ago. He's gonna get the play time. The Yankees obviously really need him at this point. It's not the Yankee lineup that has Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. It's the Yankee lineup that just has Aaron Judge, and that is definitively not as good. It's not going to turn over as much, but it's still a pretty damn good lineup. So if you're telling me I can get 450 to 500 plate appearances out of Ben Rice, the way he's hitting the ball, the way he hit the ball last season, then yeah, all of a sudden I'm starting to get a little bit interested. What does hurt is I'm pretty sure he lost his catcher eligibility in most places. I know he did on
not out of new.
Oh, then not. All right, then I am absolutely in on what we're talking about here with Auto New. Look, he was bad last year, but there were stretches where he looked like a really solid major leaguer, and that did come with a barrel rate of 15.6%. Like I think there's enough here for me to be like, okay, I'll roll the dice for a buck or two on Ben Rice.
As a catcher, I agree. Now, I'm looking at like my CBS league, and I think in Fantrax as well. I'm going to double check that as we chat. He is, I think, first base only in most places, and I think in those two for sure. Are you picking him up where he can only play first base?
If it's a really deep league, like we're talking bigger than 12 teams and there's the corner infield spot and a utility spot, yeah, I'm gonna go after him there. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything shallower than that, I think I should be able to find something. But first base is also not as deep as it used to be. So I think I'd still have some mild interest in shallower formats potentially if I really missed out.
Fourth on this list of most auction players right now is Victor Scott the second. He's an interesting one. Like he hit in double A in 2023. He did not hit in triple A in 2024. He definitely didn't hit in the majors in 2024. He does steal a lot of bases. He had 35 stolen bases last year across two levels. He is, to say his spring has been like come out of nowhere is an understatement. I mean, this is a guy who in 618 plate appearances in 2023 hit 9 home runs. Last year in 517 plate appearances across two levels, he hit 8 home runs. In 49 plate appearances this spring, he has 4 home runs. Like this isn't just like, oh, this guy's had power and he's having a good, no, this is totally inexplicable levels of power, even for spring training from him. He has also stolen 5 bases this spring. He has been caught twice, but you know, he has demonstrated an ability to steal bases. I'm not super worried about that. And he looks locked in as a center fielder in St. Louis. Are you picking him up? And the secondary question that is, are you picking him up outside of 5x5?
I'm not picking him up in either. If it's like an incredibly deep league and I just need steals, fine, but he's going to give you nothing else. The Cardinals suck, and he's slated to bat 9th. He has no on-base ability. The walk rate, terrible. The strikeout rate, terrible. He does not impact the ball hard. So like, paying anything for him feels like you're paying for spring home runs, and I just don't want to.
Yeah, the walk rate and strikeout rate were terrible last year in the majors. In AAA last year, 9.9% walk rate, 15.7% strikeout rate. In across multiple levels in the minors in 2023, 7.4% walk rate, 15.7% strikeout rate. Walk rate has been 16.3% this spring. Strikeout rate, more interesting to me, is down to 18.4. Are you sure he gives you nothing on base?
Well, I guess what would be considered something like I'm not expecting like a 330 on base percentage out of this guy.
Right.
The major league, there's a reason his strikeout rate was terrible in the majors and not in the minors last year. The major league is a hell of a lot harder. And I that's great that in the minors it was better. And so far this spring it was better. I'm not going to stake any kind of money on him drastically improving those stats.
Yeah, I mean, and the projections on him still, like looking at his Fangraphs page, and there's, you know, however many different projection systems here, Oopsie and the Bat and the Bat X and ATC and Zips and Steamer and blah, 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 blah. His on-base percentage projections range from a low of 275 from the Bat to a high of 296 from Steamer. So yeah, that is the range that he's projected in.
Even with the improved, like the much, much better strikeout rate and much, much better walk rate in the minors last year at AAA, his on-base percentage was 294.
He also, for the thing that's interesting with him is last year in AAA and then in the majors, he had a 235 and then a 233 BAPIP. He's fast enough that I don't get why that BAPIP is that low. Now, he doesn't hit the ball super hard. Yeah. Man, I don't know. There's something there. Like, he doesn't hit the ball that hard. He had a 5.7% barrel rate. That isn't great by any means. It's not a power hitter. But that isn't like, he's not Nick Madrigal either. We talked last week about Chandler Simpson. He's not Chandler Simpson.
No, maybe.
So
he might be.
Maybe. Fair enough. All right. I think that's enough on Victor Scott. I'm with you. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate there. The guy tied with him for the fourth most auctions right now is Dedeniel Nunez. Now, this may be sort of an auto news special where Nunez is a reliever for the Mets. He has posted very high strikeout rates throughout his minor league career. And then last year in the majors, 35 innings in relief, a 35.6% strikeout rate with just a 5.9% walk rate. This year in the spring, it's only, I think, only 2 innings so far. So like very little, but he, in those 2 innings, he has three strikeouts and no walks. So he's just sort of picking up where he left off. Right. The thing to note is that last year in the majors, he had a total of 9 holds and 1 save in a little over half a season. So, you know, you're looking at a guy who last year, like if he maintains a similar role, is probably looking at one, maybe 2 saves and 15-ish holds, something like that. So not a zero in holds, you know, your holds plus saves leagues or in your auto new leagues where holds matter, but not a ton there. I suspect that what we're seeing here is just that auto new does value those really talented setup guys and middle relievers. And I think he falls into that. I don't think he really makes sense in other formats.
No, he doesn't. I mean, if he repeats last year, he'll be a nice roster for your ratios, but I have no interest outside of deep Otnu.
Yeah. He is the kind of guy that, like, we talked before my draft in that CBS league. We talked about one strategy being to just punt saves and go after middle relievers who give you a ton of strikeouts and good rates. He would have fallen into that camp for me there. I ended up in that league picking up a $6 Chris Martin and a $15 Jordan Romano. And that with a $3 Jason Foley and the ability to sort of grab another closer who pops during the season seemed fine. We'll see how long I stick with that plan, but that's what I ended up doing. But Nunez is the kind of guy who, like, had I gone the other route and been like, forget it, I'm just getting $2, $3, $1 guys, he would have fit that bill. The last guy I want to talk about is we hit the hour mark here. Brett Beatty is next in this list of most auctioned players in Auto New at $19. I am interested in Beatty. I have been picking up Beatty in a couple places. I think that when you look at Beatty, I know that his playing time is at this point short term. It looks like he's going to be the second baseman, at least for now. I know that we should take spring stats with a grain of salt, but he is in 53 plate appearances, walking 9.4% of the time and striking out 9.4% of the time. He's hit 3 home runs. The bigger thing with him is he's still only 25 and he has real pedigree. Like, this was a guy who a couple years ago we were really excited about. I tend to be a believer that those skills don't just vanish, right? And the fact that he's showing it in the spring, yes, it's just the spring. I'm super intrigued, and I think the upside, like, Jeff McNeil will be back. If Brett Beatty is hitting the way Brett Beatty can hit, Jeff McNeil is not going to take his job.
No, I'm with you on Brett Beatty here, and it's because of what you just said. This is a guy with actual pedigree. So, like, you see Victor Scott doing all this stuff in spring training. It's like, that's very nice. But with Brett Beatty, like, it could mean something. It at least means he's earned himself a job, because if he was hitting right. .116, he's not going to be playing second base for the Mets. He needed to perform well this spring, and he did. And, like, last year at AAA, he was really, really good. So, like, could he end up being a quad A player? Maybe. But as recently as our most recent season at AAA, he was elite. 16 homers and 269 plate appearances. So you're talking about a full season of 30 to 40 homer pop with an excellent walk rate. And on a team where, like, I think there's been a lot of pressure on Brett Beatty because he was a top prospect for a New York team. Now it's like, I don't know. Like, no one even wants him there anymore. So I think there's going to be less pressure on him. I don't know the guy. Maybe he's got more pressure on him than anyone's ever had in history, but I'm fine rolling the dice on him because the play time's there and he does more than one thing. I'm in on Brett Beatty.
I also think, you know, in your keeper leagues, like, the upside on Beatty is big because he could lock down multiple years as a starting second baseman. And I think there's a chance he's a platoon bat. He may be the left side or the left-handed side, the strong side of a platoon. So you should keep that in mind in, like, your weekly lineups and stuff like that. Like, that may ding his value. But this isn't just a guy that you're – and I think this applies when we were talking about Veen. But it's a thing that maybe doesn't apply as much to Rice. It maybe doesn't apply as much to Freeman. Like, those are guys who – I feel less confident in, hey, if they perform, they're going to be locked into a lineup spot for the foreseeable future. Like, even if Rice performs, I think there's a decent chance he performs at the, like, nice bench bat kind of level, right? Which is great for a catcher in Auto New, but isn't going to make him a keeper for the foreseeable future. Beatty, at least for this year and next year, will be second base eligible. He could be a second baseman for a long time. And His upside is, you know, locked in as a starter for the Mets for the next decade. And so that's really intriguing to me. I also think the other thing with Beatty is while I do worry a little bit about, like, McNeil comes back or Luis Angel Acuna just proves to be so much better defensively and they want to go that route or whatever. Like, there's some paths to him losing his job. However, there are some other guys in that lineup. Like, he could DH over Jesse Winker. Like, who knows what Jesse Winker is going to be. I am not saying this because I am out on Mark Vientos or anything, but Vientos had a real strikeout issue and he still does. And there is a non-ignorable path to Vientos losing his job. I think it would take a while, but, you know, if there's a chance that when McNeil comes back, that Vientos is the guy who's like, oh, this guy can't hit, right? Like, so we'll see. I think there are multiple paths to him maintaining a job, even if second base isn't his forever. But from a fantasy perspective, he's going to lock in second base eligibility. Like, you know, sometime soon, he's going to have second base eligibility in every format for this year and next.
So let me ask you one thing, Chad, to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Let's say, like, I think Beatty's upside is even higher than we might be giving him credit for, because, and we're clearly hyping him up. If he does get to 500, let's just say 500 plate appearances. Let's not go any higher, which maybe is still a long shot, but let's just say 500. How many second basemen hit more home runs than him if he gets to 500? I can't imagine very many.
So you're saying, all right, so it's the end of the season. He has hit, he has 500 plate appearances under his belt. Mm-hmm. And you're asking me how many, where does he rank among second basemen in home runs? I mean, just thinking about this off the top of my head, he's probably behind Ketel Marte.
Probably.
I mean, you know, maybe Marte gets hurt, but if Marte doesn't get hurt, I don't think Beatty out homers him.
Sure.
There are four other names I can think of that I'd be like, maybe. And I don't think any of them are locks. Semien could hit more than him. Altuve could hit more than him. Brandon Lau could hit more than him. And Jackson Holliday could hit more than him. But if you told me he was second, honestly, if you told me that Ketel Marte missed 3 months and that Brett Beatty ended up leading second baseman in home runs, you're right. I don't think that's a crazy, that's not an outlier. Like, that's not like something I'm like, oh, no way that happens. I think it's more likely that he ends up in, you know, third, fourth, a couple of those other guys hit more than him. But like, yeah, top five among second baseman in home runs. If you promise me 500 plate appearances, now there's the conflating factor here is the only way he gets to 500 plate appearances is if he's hitting that many home runs. Like, there's no world in which he sucks and still gets 500 plate appearances. But if he gets to 500 plate appearances, it will be because he's hitting for power, and he will end up as a top, probably a top three second baseman in home runs.
He would have only needed 24 last year to finish second home runs.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Marte at 36, Semien at 23, Altuve at 20. No one else was over 20. Beatty doesn't get 500 plate appearances without 20 home runs, both because he's a good enough power hitter to do that if you give him 500 plate appearances, and because if he's not pacing towards that, he's not going to get to the 500 plate appearances. So, sure. Yeah, I think the guy who's missing from the top of that list is Brandon Lau, who missed some time last year and I think is certainly a threat to break into that group. And
he then, still hits 21. It's probably an eligibility thing that he's not there.
That's right.
Him and Morel, who might not have eligibility on every format, I don't know, but he hit 21 last year as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, fair enough. Maybe he's, you know, top five, top six, somewhere in that range. The other guy we met, you know, like Jordan Westberg has second base eligibility. He had 18.447 last year. So, like, maybe I'm overstating it by saying top three. Maybe it's more like top five, but like, he's very much in that race. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, ending on that positive note, go pick up Brett Beatty. I'm going to go do that. Thank you all for listening. We should be back on our regular schedule now. We'll see how that goes, but should be hearing from us every Monday. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll talk to you next week.